Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. You didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you.
Well, I don't think Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, just met Weber on the board. S&P futures are up 275. NASDAQ futures up 10. Dow futures up 43. The Walmart earnings just came out, and we got the stack is it's up like $2, up 342. They beat on everything, and their gasoline component of their sales was way up. Imagine that. That's the price is up like huge. Brennan, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Chief. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, except Manny and I almost had a duck coming into the office. How many squad cars were flying by us down towards River City there, Manny? I thought maybe there were bullets going to be coming our way.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It was about 4 squad cars, 2 fire trucks, and an ambulance, so something big.
Yeah, something. So Brennan, you're living in where, you know, you guys have, like, no teeth and so forth. Just saying. You can't buy any bullets here. Everybody's out. Can you get them out by you? If you do that, you should have a bullet store. Everybody running up there and get some.
You know, that's the big problem right now with the supply chain. I haven't seen very many places offering ammunition for sale at cheap rates. But I will tell you that we hear a lot of gunshots over in our place in Michigan because hunters, I don't know if it's hunting season or not, at least not officially, but there's a lot of target practice, if not hunting, going on right now.
Well, the deer season, did you ever go through, like, Wisconsin in deer season? It's unbelievable. Like, isn't it Thanksgiving weekend? It's
I think in Illinois it's this weekend that it opens.
Yeah, I'm not. We went up to I think it was Pete Najarian's wedding. Audrey and I, this has gotten a long time ago because kids are out of college, but we went to Galena for the weekend, and then we snuck up the river trail to Pete's wedding on a Saturday. Which is a beautiful drive. It was 33 degrees and slush, and you thought the thing was going to turn to a sheet of ice the whole way. I still remember that. But on the way back, every vehicle had either a trailer or a dead deer on the hood. You guys are driving Mercedes with a dead deer in the trunk. Would that be you, Maddie, in your Mercedes?
God, no.
And I think they knock off, is it 250,000 deer in a week or something up there? It's a massive amount. Now, this year, they were all upset because they didn't think there was going to be enough bullets to knock off all the deer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the deer were in there buying them.
Well, yeah, there are two deer seasons in most places. There's a bow and arrow season as well as a shooting season. And you can't cross over. You can't shoot deer during bow and arrow season, and you can't you can't go the opposite way and use a bow and arrow during gun season.
Well, most of your animal rights people absolutely are aghast at the bow and arrow because unless you're really good, you don't kill them. You just wound them.
Well, I've got a friend who's here at camp, and he is a bow and arrow person, and he thinks that his skills are sharp enough, and he says it's a more humane way to kill the deer. But you're right. You've got to be good, and you've got to hit the right spot.
Yeah, because anyway.
Does anyone ask the deer what's more humane when we're killing them out of the woods?
I'm not. I've not, but that would be a very interesting poll thing.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the deer has to think.
Shot by an arrow or getting shot by lead?
When he's eating grass in the woods, minding his own business, I'd like to know what he thinks. What is he like, arrows coming at him or bullets?
They had one of those political cartoons, which I guess maybe people still do. There was these two deer standing there, and one guy's got a target on him. The other guy says, "That's a bummer of a birthmark, Hal."
That's the Far Side cartoon. Yeah.
That's a good one.
But
that's the Far Side cartoon.
Yeah, one of these days, if you can find it, you got to get the piece from My Cousin Vinny, where Marissa Tomei is talking about the deer sitting there in a drink of water, minding his own business. All of a sudden, bam! When he said he was going deer hunting.
Oh yeah.
It was anyway. So all kinds of crazy.
I've forgotten that scene, but that was a good scene.
Oh God, yeah. Well, she was spectacular in that thing. I mean, well, so was he.
But it is interesting because you know I do believe that there's an overpopulation of deer in many ways, which can destroy the ecosystem. So there is a delicate balance between those who are looking out for it, because there are no natural predators for deer here except the humans.
Except all the ones we've killed.
But they can proliferate and they can really do a lot of damage to the ecosystem out in the woods and allow for a lot of native invasive species to take over in a bad way for ground cover and for growth in different areas.
Well, there was in Ogden Dunes, Rod used to have a place and we still have some friends. Talk about pitting people against people. They were going to have to cull the herd. Everybody had a sign, either cull the herd or don't cull the herd or whatever. But then when you use the term, you knock off every natural predator they have, like wolves and stuff, shouldn't be all that shocked to get an overpopulation of what's left.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly, there's more deer here now than when the pilgrims showed up.
I believe it. Why did all the wolves go away?
We killed them all.
Why?
We didn't want them. Nobody wants a wolf around their house.
Just because they would, like, kill your dog and stuff?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they'd kill your dog, but unless your dog messed with them, which most would.
Yeah.
There was a whole thing.
We didn't kill the coyotes.
No, they're around, and the foxes. Actually, the coyotes, for a long period of time, you know, you never saw those. Now they're all over the place.
Yeah.
They're smart suckers, too.
I know there's wolf conservatories. I don't know why we don't just bring the wolves back.
Well, we introduced them to Yellowstone, about 10 years ago? They were banned from Yellowstone forever. Because the farmers said they would knock off their small, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But then now if you actually can prove that a wolf nailed your cattle, they just pay you for it. Some of these areas. Because they brought the, was it Bring the Gray Wolf Back? Was that it? Well, there's a couple different kinds of wolves. If you go out west, there's you see a lot of foxes. Now, out where Audrey is, it's all coyotes. There's a couple of coyotes in the city.
Oh, yeah. I've seen them. I've seen them on the golf course many times and in Forest Preserve golf courses in the city.
Yeah, well,
there's even been a few stories in the last couple of years where they've been roaming around downtown.
Those aren't the women on Rush Street. Those are actual coyotes.
Yeah. Whoa.
Heyo.
We saw the one coming to work one time. Eh? Remember the guy crossing North Avenue there? He's right by the river. Anyway,
why did the coyote cross the road?
Yeah. Tell you what, though, those guys are pretty smart. You never see them hit by a car up by Audrey. They watch for traffic.
I didn't see very many coyotes or fox hopping on the road in Michigan. There are a lot of deer. There are a lot of raccoons.
Yeah.
But rarely, I don't ever recall seeing a coyote.
So, all kinds of stuff here in the horizon.
They're wily critters.
Oh, yeah. And they, they're loud, too. They're always in Audrey's backyard. You know, it's interesting when the little ones chime in with the whole little high-pitched howl. The little guys, some of the little guys are like lost. She had they had some one little guy, he must have lost his parents. He was eating the bottom of the bird feeder out by her. The cute little dude, but the parents would never have let him do that in broad daylight if they were around, I don't think. So you gonna buy some Green Bay Packers stock, Brennan?
I heard that they're going on the market for another offering.
Yeah, $90 million.
Why
bucks.
Would you not want to buy Packers stock?
Well, it's like buying Bitcoin, not worth anything. Same thing.
Except Bitcoin, you can use to buy other stuff.
If a lot of Bears fans buy Packer stock, take over control, get rid of the management, get rid of a lot of the good players, bring in a lot of crap players, maybe there's a way for the Bears to beat them in the next 5 years.
So the problem is you don't get any control with this alleged stock.
I know, but it's a good concept, isn't it?
Why do they...
For the team to come down to Illinois and put the market to the sale out for the stock and at least boost their sales.
But why do they feel like they have to call it stock just to get people pissed off? Why don't they just say you're buying a Packer certificate for $300?
So yeah, I don't know. You know, you would think it would just be to support the team. Support your local team.
Yeah.
That's the scam of it.
An ownership interest, or allegedly an ownership interest.
Yeah, that's the whole scam of it. If the Bears or the Jets or any other team said, hey, come buy a $300 certificate and you can hang it on your wall that says, I'm the number one Bears fan or Jets fan, we'd be like, I'm good. Like, no one's going to buy it.
Well, but I mean, how much are the jerseys? The jerseys are $200.
Well, I know, but the jerseys are something you can wear.
True.
I mean, it's,
well, listen, you can put it on your wall.
They have some value. There's no value in this certificate. The fact that they've convinced these morons that they're, like, shareholders and part owners of the team is hilarious.
Well, we are talking about Wisconsin.
I mean, I don't know what we're talking about, but that's rich. I love that. And I don't know why you compare it to Bitcoin, because that makes no sense. Bitcoin, you can actually buy stuff with. You can't buy anything with this piece of paper. It is useless.
Well, I mean, you don't get a vote in Bitcoin.
Buy stuff with it.
We don't share any profits.
It's not a stock. It's a currency. You can buy stuff with it. I can go buy a car with it. I can go buy food with it. I can buy anything with it. This Packers certificate,
I challenge you to go into Myers and buy something with Bitcoin. Just saying.
Not every store is accepting it right now, but many are. Hundreds.
Well, some probably are.
Hundreds, not some.
I'm going to say that if you have your certificate and you walk into another Packer fan store and said, I don't have any money, but I'll give you this, he'll take it if it's up to $300.
I don't know. I don't know.
You think there's no secondary?
That's a barter system.
Yeah. You think there's no secondary market for him?
No, I don't.
So there's no chance of anybody. The thing is going to be oversubscribed by these guys. You know that. So the guy who doesn't get one, you don't think he'll buy one the next day if you say that you don't want yours?
I just can't imagine anyone buying these, but apparently they will.
I bet they sell out. It's
right, all. Yeah, you're right. It's hard to believe they're buying them in the first place, never mind on a secondary market.
Well, I just hope that they realize that it's just a contribution to the team. I mean, if you went out and the Bears would say, we need some money, we're going to give you a really nice jersey for $300, you know, whether you wear it or don't, or whether you frame it, or we'll frame a Nitschke jersey for $300, and people went out and bought it. As long as they tell you what it is, it's not up to us to, you know. But the use of the term stock is a little weird. Just saying.
It's all in marketing.
Yes.
It's a good marketing play.
Speaking of good football players, Sam Huff died, yesterday, right?
I saw that, yeah.
He was one of the original middle linebackers. There were very few. Didn't they used to attribute essentially the making of the position to was it Bill George or was it Sam Huff, where the first guy over center stood up and walked back? Before then, they used to have a fight.
I don't know if it was Sam Huff or Bill George, but it was around that time when they started that position. And if you're a defensive football player, you want to be the middle linebacker. And you really want to be the middle linebacker on the Bears or the Packers.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, Huff was what, the Giants?
Wasn't it the Eagles?
I think he was the Giants. Maybe, am I right? I don't know. I'm going to say the Giants. He played with the... Didn't he play with the... Have you ever watched that game, the greatest game ever played, where Johnny Unitas played the Giants? Got everybody on the Giants was a name. Big Daddy Lipscomb, and they had, who was the guy from Southern Cal? The guy was the announcer forever. They had all kinds of people on that team. Fran Tarkenton.
He played for the Giants for his first, looks like, 7 years. And then he played for the Washington Redskins for his final 5 years. So almost even split between
really?
The two.
Okay.
Yeah, Giants first half of his career, Redskins second half of his career.
Did you
played from?
Will they change that to the Washington football team now? And
got to
rewriting that.
Well, right now it just says Washington, but I knew it was the Redskins, so you can say it because it was back then. But he played from 1956 through 1969.
Manny, as a younger guy, you should start to realize that your generation is trying to become very Stalin-esque. It was never the Redskins. You think I'm kidding? We're going to write everybody out of the Civil War history books, right? We're going to take the statues down. We're going to take them out of history. I'll bet you Mark Huckleberry Finn makes it about another 2 years before it's out of every library.
It's possible.
But it was never there. So it's not like it was we're banning it because it has the N-word in it. It was never there. It's very Stalin-esque. I'm going to have to find those emails from Kathy where she showed... We got to tweet those out one day. They are spectacular. Remember Kathy Reardon, Brennan?
Kathy Durbin. Yeah.
Durbin, I'm sorry. It was Kevin Reardon, Kathy Durbin. And whenever you wanted to piss the two of them off, you'd say, why don't you two get married? Because they were good friends. they all pissed off. And Kathy actually dug up some dirt on Stalin, and there was a couple of pictures she sent me. I'll find them. I think I can find them. Where they showed like Stalin with his arm around a guy like on a bridge, and all of a sudden the next picture the guy's gone, and Stalin's standing next to the rail without the guy there. It's he had like 200 people. If he offed you, it wouldn't just be we killed poor Brendan. It would be you never existed. All the pictures mm-hmm. that come down in your place, they'd go to your place, and if you're in a legal book somewhere, they'd get all those books, pull that page out, and reissue all the copies. He was good at it. Just saying.
Well, it seems like the Chinese are doing that right now under Xi Jinping.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
We're going through a rewrite of history.
What they say, the winners get to write the history or something like that?
Yep.
So what do you... Two things on the news that we probably should comment on, see if it hits the market. Well, it's not really. The market's doing nothing. Walmart, we do have up 334 on there. Let me ask you this, Brennan. As somebody who isn't as goofy about this inflation stuff as I am, which I hope nobody is, by the way, I just wish I wouldn't remember it as vividly as I do, because I know it's a bad thing. But anyway, let's not go there. But you look at Walmart's numbers, and they talk about the same store sales. They talk about people in the store. They talk about, you know, gasoline sales way up. How do you even, I mean, and you're not into this all day long, thank God for you, but how do you even interpret those numbers in an inflationary period that we are? We're knowing that gas prices are up, what, 40% in a year or so. How do you even sit there and figure out if they did good or bad?
Well, even look at your cost of your goods sold for what they make to see if they're really making any more money than they were before, depending on the revenue.
You go to FIFO
to determine what your cost of inventory is and how you're selling that.
No, I'm saying how do you? Well, actually, as usual, when I say something, about 10 questions in there, which I shouldn't do. How do you even know? I mean, they don't give you. We sold X number of gallons last year and this year, which they used to back in the late 70s. Early 70s, they would actually break that out for you. There was a way you reported in an inflationary period. General Motors would say sales was up 5%, but by the way, the amount of cars sold was down 2%. And they would actually say that. Mm-hmm. Nobody says that anymore. They just give you the gross numbers. So, in Walmart, I practical guarantee that no matter what, they have enough pricing power, especially in the towns where they're the only place. They're not about. If the price of salami goes up 10%, they're raising it at least 10%, in one man's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
They have no shame about that. I mean, they're going to tell you it's a supply chain issue, but it's, you know. Actually, I had a discussion with a guy last night who's a big shot in the industry, does one of the big firms that does a lot of market making and, you know, providing markets to the floor. I almost said on the trading floor. Actually, they do have a couple guys on the floor. And he was talking about all these different supply chain issues. And I said, inflation has nothing to do with supply chain issues. He looked at me like I had four heads. He goes, what are you talking about? They can't get this, they can't get that. I said, I understand that. And in some areas, those particular prices should go up because you can't get stuff. But every single product is not a supply chain issue. When you have a general inflation like that, it's just too much money in the system. He says, well, there wouldn't be, you're saying if there was no... If there it was no crazy Fed, that there'd be no inflation? I go, yeah. No, it wouldn't. I mean, it doesn't mean that if you can't get toys from China, that the price of toys wouldn't go up this year, but the price of something else would go down. Your general inflation level is totally having to do with how much money's in the system. You know what, Brent? I don't think 1 out of 1,000 people believes me when I say that. You know? I mean, because you hear it so much, the constant drone all day long. If we only could get... You know, the containers into the ports and the people would work on the weekend, somehow all these prices would come down. That's not true at all. I mean, you think I'm not? Are you one of the ones that thinks I'm nuts?
No, I agree with you.
Well, it's two of us. We now have a gang of two.
I think you're nuts, but that has nothing to do with what you're talking about.
I'm nuts for caring about it. I guess maybe that's why I'm nuts about it. But
I think Matty's comment is a little bit more nuanced.
Oh, I know. So what do you think of your buddies, the Russians, last night? We'll have to ask Lou. They blew up a satellite in orbit, just to prove
could
do it.
Wasn't that crazy? And they did it intentionally. Were they just trying to show off their capabilities that they can send a rocket up and blow up a satellite? But they put their astronauts, their own cosmonauts, at risk at the station. Plus, some of that material is going to be floating around space at high speed for 100 years.
Did you realize that the space station, for those listeners that haven't heard this story, the Russians blew up a satellite up in space, evidently just to prove that they could, right? I mean, I don't think there's anything else wrong with the thing. And was it just an old satellite or something? Like, it must have been.
Well, it was time to rewrite history, so that's being removed. That satellite never existed.
It never existed? Well, hey, stranger things are happening, Brent. Well, the weird part is the thing was somewhere in the path of the space station. And there's two Russian guys on the space station, but what, there's like 7 or 9 people are total? Evidently, there's these safety pods in the thing, Brendan. If you see some coming at you, mm-hmm. you head into these pods. So if even the thing gets whacked, you're safe, or sort of safe. What happens if the thing really gets clobbered? No,
I heard that part of the story, and I thought, you know, is there a special Kevlar container that's attached to the space station that's different from everything else up here?
Sounded like there were a bunch of individual ones.
In a safe spot compared to the rest of the station.
Evidently, these things are more secure than the station itself if debris starts hitting it. And so what happens?
Yeah, I did see that. Unless maybe they're escape pods. You know, like in the movies, you get your own escape pod and if something's about to happen, it just ejects the whole thing.
It might, but I don't know. I mean, it's not going to make it back to Earth.
It would not be good. True.
I wouldn't want to be one of those guys. All of a sudden, hey, your idiots just blew up something right in front of us. Look at all this stuff coming at us. That would not be cool.
Nope.
Just saying. I don't know. Crazy world.
It does seem like it seems like the pieces of the satellite that was blown up will remain in orbit, the same kind of an orbit that the satellite was in, so that it, every so often it'll come back around and just like being on a racetrack, you know, it just keeps coming around and coming around and coming around for the next 100 years.
Well, they actually are showing that. Did you ever see anything where they talk about they keep a map of all these things up there? There's all kinds of, they call it obviously space junk, but
mm-hmm.
actually what the hell was it? There was like 4 items that if everybody died. Where the hell was I reading this? Some stupid thing that somebody sent me. If everybody died in like a million years, what would be left of where people would even know that people existed here? And there's only like 4 things that they could even come up with that would be absolutely that time couldn't erase. And one of them was, believe it or not, was Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
And one was the Hoover Dam. They said it would be destroyed as a dam. It would be no longer useful as a dam, but people would realize that all that concrete didn't get in one spot without somebody helping it there. And the other one was some stuff in space that would still be orbiting. The other was the stuff we left on the moon.
Hmm.
It would still be there. Wasn't very much.
What about spam in a can?
Maybe some of the plastic of the ocean, right? God. You know what lasts kind of forever, too? Our old toilets. If you put them in water, they just sit there forever. They don't decay. I mean, ceramic, I guess, doesn't really decay, does it? Anyway, how do we get off on this topic? So what do you make of this earnings season? What do you think of what the market's doing here? And I don't know if you spotted the 30-year rate went through 2% yesterday, Brennan. Where do we have it this morning? Still 2.07. What do you think of that? It hasn't gone through that in a while, and there were some people were talking about it on CNBC yesterday. And one guy, I didn't fact check him. Although I'll tell you this, you can't get the Fed balance sheet that's supposed to come out at 10 o'clock on Friday. It still wasn't available last night. So I think they're in this mode where they're not gonna tell us what the numbers are. They don't give you the money supply anymore, which is really unbelievable. Out of all the things I've ever seen government do, that's probably the most arrogant, at least for somebody who likes to look at it. So It went through 2%. Some guy said that the Fed now owns, I think he said, over 50% of all the long-term government paper. Can you even conceive of such a thing?
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Over 50% of all the paper?
No, the long-term. Long-term.
The long-term paper.
I mean, what, they must. I've heard numbers of like 60% in Europe, but I can't. I mean, I don't know where the hell I'd even go to find that out. But I mean, when in Europe, the inflation's worse than ours, and their long term rates are negative. So where does that put them? At about a 9% negative interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people buying that are the central bank with your money, with our money. How does that make you feel, bud?
That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, but look, I mean, look at the numbers though. This year, I should have both in front of me. The federal deficit is $2.4 trillion, and I think the Fed is up a trillion. So they're essentially 35 to 40% of the deficit they're printing. The rest are obviously borrowing. That's a lot.
That's a very lot. That's a very big number.
Yeah, and I can't even imagine what the number is in Europe. Why those guys still need negative rates? Can you think of any reason on that? At least let them go to 2% like our guys are, or whether they're letting them go or they're going up by themselves. But big difference between our tenure rate is. Our tenure rate is, where is it? If you want to know what these numbers are, TNX is the 10-year and TYX is the 30-year. As of last night, the TYX was 2.007 and the 10-year was 1.62, which is kind of a recent high. But still, Brent, I don't see you running into PTI and buying a 10-year bond at 1.6%. I don't see you doing that, do you?
Nope.
And so you do have to ask yourself, who is doing it? And the answer is our guys. And some people would have to. But didn't the when you were doing your stuff for the city, did most of the city people, like schools and the school board, those kinds of places, the sense that they had their own money, because they are a separate taxing group, right? I mean, or at least, do they have requirements that they can only put it in a bank, or was it Treasury, or was it U.S. Treasury certificates?
Yeah, if you look under Illinois statutes, in most states are the same way. There is a list of permitted investments that can be held. Like the city of Chicago has a municipal ordinance that gets updated every year that doesn't really change, but safe investments. Nothing really speculative, no stocks. They have to be really safe securities.
Because I know the...
And for the most part, pretty liquid.
I know the state was like that. It had to be U.S. Treasury securities, I think.
Yep.
I don't think they could buy another state. I think it had to be treasuries.
It depends. And if they... And even within the categories, they can only buy a certain rated security. They couldn't go to junk status. They've got to maintain the securities that they buy have to maintain a certain credit rating.
Who else do you think are? We've had other guests on. What they talked about. I mean, who else would be a natural buyer of a bond that you and I would never buy? I mean, I guess maybe insurance companies would have to have a certain amount of longer term stuff in their portfolio. I would guess. I mean, almost by charter. And I think it's probably some...
Yeah, there are insurance companies, there are certain banks who do it. Yeah, I mean, for some types of the credits, there's CRA credits for the community redevelopment that they'll buy certain types of stocks from municipalities. but you know, it used to be a long time ago that mom and pops would buy the securities, the municipal securities, because they were safe. They were deemed to be so safe that you found a lot of individual purchasers do it for the good of the community.
Well, Brandon,
kind of like buying Packer stock.
Oh yeah. Well, Brandon, we got a dash here, but I might. We opened up a conversation last week with Dan Janitas and Jan Flanagan about munis and all those kinds of things, and we were just getting into it. And maybe on Jan's segment later in the week, maybe we could jump onto you too, because the two of you guys together, and I'd promise to shut up, would probably. Because I think it's an area that listeners, we never talk about, that we should probably move into some new areas and educate there as well. If you're busy, we'll talk to you. Anyway, S&P Futures up $1.50 now, and NASDAQ Futures down a quarter, so real slow. Thank you, Ben. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks, Mr. Joel and Conan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 1.25, Nasdaq futures up 175. So been mostly up, but kind of flipping back and forth now around this flat line. I'm not sure why we're Dow futures up 60. Part of that is we got Walmart is up 239 on their earnings, and we have Home Depot up 492 on their earnings. So that's probably we have Chevron, Texaco up a buck. We got oil up a little bit this morning here. So not much going on, but slightly whatever it is positive, at least so far. Nikkei up 31, call that flat. Shanghai up down 11.3%. Hang Seng up 322, that's 1.2%. Who's Razer, Matty? Razer, Joel, no. Razer shares in Hong Kong soar. Joel know that. DAX up 73.4%, FTSE up 8.1%, Kekron up 32.5%. As a way of review, yesterday Dow was down 12, S&P down a nickel, NASDAQ down 7. So it was a, shall we say, an inside day, as they used to say on the floor. 10-year down 1 basis point to 1.61. We actually went through the 2 points on the, 2% on the 10-year, 30-year yesterday for the first time in a while. Bund minus 0.24, still negative. I mean, inflation be damned over there. They're bound and determined to keep those rates negative. Japan positive 0.07. We've got oil up 47 cents, 81.35 after ducking briefly under $80 yesterday morning. I mean, real briefly. The first break, the second break was back over 80. Brent up 70 cents, 82.76. Natural gas up 14 cents, 5.16 as it continues to run back and forth between $6 and under 5. It's kind of crazy. RBOB up 2 cents to 2.35. We got gold, which has been on kind of a tear, up 8.70 again today, 18.75. 5 month peak and persistent inflation bets. Silver up 20 cents, 25.31. Copper unchanged at 4.40. And we got big news this morning on the crypto stuff. Even though they just run up to 63, it's still a big move. Down $3,200. The Bitcoin, 60,692. Again, we were just there. It doesn't seem like that big of a move, but it is 7%. So if you bought at 63, it's not a good day. Betty, what do you got for us? Trevi Brothers Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash here on the outbound Stevenson. This is right at Route 83, which is Kingery Highway out in the southwestern suburbs. It's actually a disabled vehicle, not a crash, but it's blocking the right lane and causing a slowdown as crews work to get that car out of the way. No issues on the inbound side, just a little bit of a slowdown at Cicero near Midway. Eisenhower starting to build in traffic, but no accidents to report. Same for the Kennedy. Edens is all quiet. Southside expressways are looking good. It looks like everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, we warm up a little bit compared to what we've been the last few days. Still chilly out there, partly cloudy with a high of 49. Right now it's clear and 39 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 83 today. Right now it's clear and 57. In sports, the Bulls are on the West Coast and they swept the LA teams in back-to-back nights, beating the Clippers on Sunday night, and then last night they played the LeBron James-less Lakers and blew out LA 121-103 as the Bulls keep on rolling on their West Coast circus trip. Suns beat the T-Wolves last night 99-96. NFL football, it was the 49ers all over the Rams on Monday Night Football. 31-10 was the final in that one. Rams were favored in that game and they were never in it. Lastly, number 10, Illinois in college hoops lost a tough heartbreaker on the road at Marquette, 67-66. Illinois blew a 12-point second-half lead in that one, falling by one. Chief.
Bill Murphy's going to be happy.
That's right.
His Blue Demons. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How are you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm doing all right. We saw a bunch of police cars go flying by us. We were kind of ducking, looking to hear some stuff, and I have a new additional responsibility for Mr. Weber. 460.125 is your new. You got to get some kind of a scanner here, Matty. You can get onto Apple Audio Feeds or something and download this thing, and you can be listening to all the police reports citywide while the show's going
isn't
on.
Isn't that so, is that a CB radio? Remember CB radio?
Quality scanner or a cheaper two-way radio and tune in, or you can go to the Apple or Google app. Who's this guy? Crimmels Downs Live Audio Feeds, and you can check out 460.125 is citywide. If you want all the evidence text, whatever you can call to, it's 460.125. But there's things you can find out on the internet. Isn't it amazing? Just saying. But anyway, the local, the Loop Mag Mile in Gold Coast, Matty, is frequency 460.150. Saying.
You know, I got a, my wife's not real happy about it. You know, I told you I was in Chicago a couple weeks, about a month or so ago, a month and a half.
I must have forgot about the dinner.
And I told her, I said, you know, I want to drive down the Gold Coast. I want to drive down, you know, Magnificent Mile. You know, I want to see if it's really bad, as like, you know, everyone says. So, on the way out of town from the Clark University area, I'm driving down Michigan Avenue, no big deal, you know, there's, you know, the lights and everything. I'm trying, being a good driver. Well, lo and behold, just a few weeks ago, we got a ticket of me running a red light. Well, they actually blamed Lisa because it was her car and her registered. And the light kind of looked kind of amber pinkish to me, so she tried to fight it, and then they showed her, like, the full video. I ended up getting, and that happened once when we went to Arizona. That must be like 20 years ago. Those sneaky cameras. So, got busted in Chicago. If you go to the post office, you might see a picture of Lisa up there.
I'm sure she was real happy with you about this.
She's still mad about it. I hope she's not listening upstairs. But well, yeah, got busted running a red light on the Mag Mile.
You're not the first. They got cameras up everywhere now. It's an absolute joke.
But they don't seem to help at all on the murders or shootings. They just help giving people tickets.
Yeah, they just want to get those speeders, those out-of-state speeders, right?
Well, I have a client, we'll go nameless. Him and his family are up to like 35 of the 6-mile-an-hour over jobs. They're $35.
Jeez.
Up to like 35 of them. Wow. I'm like, you know, if you go online, it'll tell you exactly where they are. But, I mean, going 36 and a 30 is, you know, it's not exactly, you don't feel like you're on a speedway. That's not very fast. But it's 6 miles an hour over, it's $35. And
I was probably gawking, looking at the stores, you know, and seeing what's going on. Got caught off guard a little bit. But that's it. That's an update on my trip to Chicago.
Well, it's God is punishing you for not taking us out to breakfast.
I know, Chief. I know. Next time for sure. It was a last second thing. We were supposed to go to Wisconsin, but anyways, what's going on? What do you want to talk?
Well, anything about
big win on Saturday?
Yeah. Well, just real quick on the band's going through 2%, the 30-year big deal or no?
Oh, Chief. I mean, you know the. The whole world's waiting for inflation, right? And we have it, and the Fed's not doing anything. So,
do you think they're going to toss this guy and put this lady in there?
I'm sorry?
Are they going to toss Powell and put this lady in there? Brainerd or anything?
Oh, boy. The market didn't like that the other day, huh?
No. What is the motivation of that? He's doing exactly what they want him to do. What do they want him to do differently? He has not been independent. He has not been. Do they want to put somebody in there? I'm not saying she is. Do they want to put a lion in there and say, "You guys spend all you want, but I'm not helping you"? I don't think that that's what they're looking for. Do you?
What if Powell told him he's done? You know, I'm out of here.
I think
that's what I would do.
You know,
I would say sayonara. I don't need this aggravation.
My body language, I got pretty good at watching body language 20 years on a trading floor. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm great at it, but I thought pretty good at it.
Yeah.
You watch that guy speak, I think look at his body language, he knows he's giving you a bunch of crap. And I don't think he likes doing it.
You get to a pandemic and now they want to boot you out. I mean, who needs that kind of aggravation?
Oh, I know. Plus, what does he make? 200 grand a year? Are you
better? Yeah, and he can't. Well, he's probably doing a lot better trading his portfolio.
I knew you were going to say that.
Right?
So who's gonna come out of the mess of the Big Ten East? And then are they the whole thing going to get messed up if Wisconsin beats whoever does?
Oh, can you imagine that? I'll tell you right now, you got Michigan State, Ohio State this week. Ohio State, I mean, I'm no NFL scout, but I see six NFL-ready players on their offense. They're three wide receivers, they're two running backs, and that quarterback. That is scary. They just got a juggernaut of an offense. State up and down, you know, they lost that game to Purdue. What I'm hoping for is Ohio State beats Michigan State, and that sets it up for the annual showdown in Ann Arbor for the Big Ten title. And I would hasten to say we're probably going to be 2 to 3 point touchdown underdogs. So we do have a good defense. We do have three NFL-ready players on defense, Aiden Hutchinson, David Ajabo, and Daxton Hill. But holy macro, I mean, they are just so loaded on offense. So hard to be optimistic. A better season than people were calling for Harbaugh. I mean, you don't ever want to lose to Michigan State, but all is forgotten if we beat Ohio State. And I just got to hop in 1 second here. I just want to mention that my buddy Dennis and I are doing another educational event on December 11th. It's going to be posted on premarketprep.com. And we're going to do it on order execution and order flow in this market. Just talk about executions for short-term trades and even long-term trades. So I just wanted to throw that plug in there.
You know what? I bet that'd be really good, bud. And I bet a lot of people really should listen. That's what we used to do in the big seminars. We'd go and explain them how to put orders in and everything. A lot of people, you know, the nuts and bolts of the industry is not only interesting, but the better you know it, the better you do.
Yeah, figuring out the pipes and the microstructure. So,
yeah.
But all right, I'll be back with you guys next week, Thanksgiving week. Thanks for having me on, and everyone have a good day out there.
Right, take care,
as
buddy.
Always.
SP Futures up 75 cents, NASDAQ Futures down a buck slow, except Walmart and Home Depot are up. Right back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's Matt at StocksandJocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
One, two, three, four. One, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Howie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board, and we got the Beatles with us. S&P futures up a quarter, and NASDAQ futures down 375. Remember listening to that one in college, Matty. We have Mr. Kenny Paul Carey.
Hello, sir.
How are you, bud? I'm going to say the very happy Kenny Paul Carey, because I'm reading here the the headline of the day: Wall Street bankers and traders are in line for the biggest bonuses since the Great Recession. Says here, including Kenny Pulcherry.
I didn't see my name in that. What are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, bud? What's going on? Anything good? How are things in Florida?
No, it's good. It's we're waiting for this imminent Fed announcement, the White House announcement about the Fed. You know, who's going to be at the helm starting in February? Will it be Jay or will it be Lael? And then, you know, what are the odds? The odds are clearly favoring Jay at the moment, and I think the market's okay with that. But it's going to be very interesting because if he comes out with that, Lael Brainard, how is the market going to react? Clearly, you know, the White House doesn't want to see much of a reaction from the market. I think that they've actually jawboned it enough, thrown it out there, had this conversation, tore it up, built it down, tore it down, built it up, tore it down again to try to give investors and the markets an idea that, look, maybe she is the one and that the market shouldn't be so concerned about it. You know, they put it out there. It wouldn't be a complete surprise if he nominates her. I guess it's just that the surprise is going to be what the market does in reaction to that nomination. So, you know, we're all sitting around waiting as we hear that announcement. But beyond that, it all appears good, right? The market's just kind of churning in place. We're closer to the highs than not. We started tapering, as of this week for Friday. They made that announcement, so they're starting to taper. The question is going to be, and I think some of the concern yesterday was, suddenly it feels like the market might think that the Fed's going to have to revise that schedule and taper faster and sooner because, in fact, they are concerned about this quote-unquote transitory inflation, which, you know, I think is laughable because I don't think it's transitory at all. But that's a whole other conversation.
Well, it sort of isn't. It's sort of this. It's the same. It is the conversation. I mean, I think that any of us that have any sort of history in this realize they're hopelessly behind the curve. Not only is it not transitory, they're causing more every day, for God's sake.
Yeah. More every day. It's unbelievable, right?
And but you know how they're going to fight it? They're going to not give us the numbers. We still don't have the Friday balance sheet numbers, you know.
Yeah.
They're not going to tell us what M2 is, and they're not going to tell us what the balance sheet is. They're not going to tell us. So that's how they're going to fight it. Now, there's a way to do it.
Well, I guess we're going to find out, right? We're going to see as we make it through the day here.
Yeah, by the way, we did send out a little thing yesterday, who should be the next Fed chairman, and your name was one of the choices, and you got a couple of votes.
I don't know where you get your information from. I'd like to,
well, first
like
of all,
to see the report you read.
I'm going to say that you have zero chance, because not because you aren't capable, but because we don't want anything to do with over 40 white males. There's not going to be.
That's right.
There's the reason why he's going to get...
Right? I mean, that's what they're saying. So therefore, that's no good.
Yeah, we got to be thrown out. We have no concern. Not that there shouldn't be anybody who's capable should get every job. I think everybody who's ever been near this show realizes that's what we all think on this show. That doesn't mean you kick out qualified people because you have quotas of any sort. To me, are bad. But I mean, what does this lady bring to the table? Jay Powell has done, well, first of all, I don't think he's been a very good chairman, Kenny, because he's done everything they wanted him to do. And he's no more independent than if I had a pet spaniel, for God's sake.
Listen, I hear you loud and clear. Although I will say, I think he's done a good job in terms of, you know, talking about it and trying to maintain, you know, some stability. I think he's had. I think it's been a very, very interesting time. I think, you know, you can poke at him in either direction, but for the most part, I think that he's done a good job. I think he's fallen behind the eight ball. I think, you know, whether it's him or the whole Fed, or who are you going to point the blame at? But I guess he's said chair, so you got to point the blame at somebody. I do think they're behind the eight ball, and I think if anything, that's what's going to come back to bite him in the backside is that this growing chorus of people saying, you know, we're behind. You know, they should have done this, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. In fact, I think they should have started 6 months ago, but, you know, that's me. But one or the other, what does she bring to the table? Look, she's part of the Fed now. She's certainly a known factor. She's not known from a Fed chair perspective, but we know how she feels. We know that she's a little bit more, maybe dovish than he is. She's more left, so she's going to be more progressive. Not that I think progressive is a mandate for the Fed. I don't remember reading that in the Fed's mandate, but the pressure is coming from the left, and Joey's collapsing, right? So Joey's just giving in to everything on the left. Now, here's what I think potentially is going to happen so that everyone gets a little bit of what they want without getting it all. Joey may renominate Powell, but then he's going to elevate her to vice chair, and then he'll nominate two left-leaning bankers to fill Kaplan's spot and Rosengren's spot. So this way, he's kind of padded the Fed with left-leaning Democrat spot while leaving Jay in control. I think that's going to be the ultimate answer versus Jay getting thrown out and Lael being put in charge.
Your assessment, I'm sure, is spot on. It always is. But, Scotty, you can't change the laws of physics. I don't care how freaking left somebody leans. The man is buying over 50% of the long-term paper. What more do they want out of the guy?
Listen, I hear you. I don't know what more they want, but they never seem to get enough between Bernie and Lizzie. They're never satisfied. They want. And look, that goes right to the second part of this infrastructure bill. They keep telling us it's 1.7 trillion, right? They cut it down from 3 to 1.7. In fact, the Wharton School at UPenn is telling us that it's actually a $4 trillion bill if it gets passed in the form that it's in. But yet nobody wants to talk about that, right? Well, they don't want to keep telling us it's only 1.7. So I think it's a disaster waiting to happen. I think a lot of people realize that, but the Dems, I think they realize that they're in trouble come the midterm, so they're just going to try to push anything they can through. Really quickly. I don't think it's going to work.
Kenny, I'm going to ask you for a
cinema.
Without making it personal, and of course I'm going to make it personal right away. Without making it personal, when you look at the people that are on the progressive side, I won't even say Democrats, the progressive side, have they ever taken an economics course? You can't just print money and spend it and expect it anywhere.
You often wonder that. I don't know who's required to take an economics course. It doesn't seem to me that Joe Biden or anyone in the current administration has taken an economics course, but, you know, I can't really opine on that. I think, though, that it's very, very confusing.
Well, I think some of it has to do with point of view, Kenny. I mean, you and I have been around long enough that if you just ran off in the back room and ran off $1 million in hundreds and you gave it to AOC and Kamala and Elizabeth Warren and Nancy, for them, it's a good do, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it's good do for other people. And if you did it enough times to where there's inflation all over the place, the only people that are staying ahead of it is them. So right now, they're on the side of the river that doesn't flood, it doesn't appear. At least they don't think it floods. So it's fine. I mean, Milton Friedman used to talk about this all the time, that the first iteration of the inflation, especially for the people who create it, is so terrific they can't ever stop until they're forced to, because everybody says, look, you're killing us. But by the time you get to that point, you've got a real problem. I don't think we're going to have, and there's no chance of one of these guys, none, Kenny, whatsoever. Whoever it is, him or the lady or whoever they put in there, there's no chance of them pulling back before there's some massive eruption in at least public opinion, which we're probably not that far away from, actually. Maybe a year or so. But they're not going to say, don't buy anything today, because for them, it's spectacular. They're handing out money to all their buddies. And the Republicans were, too. It's not like it's their...
No, they both... That's right. I'm not saying it's a... They both hand out money to all their buddies. Both sides. It's ridiculous.
I mean, have you ever seen, other than maybe wartime, and even then, I think they borrowed most of the money. I mean, I should go back. I have economic history, not monetary history. I should go back. I think they borrowed most of the money in wartime, or at least made the effort. Right now, 40% of the federal budget is the Fed is carrying.
Right.
The budget deficit. The deficit's what? What is it? $6 trillion, and they came up with, or $4 trillion, and they came up with what? $1.5 trillion last year?
Yeah.
So they're essentially coming up with 35% of the deficit through printed money. And some people will say, well, why not make it more? You know, why not make it more? Okay, well,
that's what they're doing. They're making it more, right? That's what they keep doing.
But if you and I were there, the difference is we would at least know we were stealing. And we may do it anyway. I don't think you and I personally would. But there's some people around there that know exactly what they're doing. I think the guy is Bullard the guy from the St. Louis Fed? I think he
St.
is.
St. Louis is Bullard. Yeah, Jimmy Bullard.
You said he's the guy who's leaving?
No, Bullard is actually being, in January when the FOMC committee changes, Bullard is actually, he's off the committee now, but he's going to be on the committee in the new year.
If he's the only guy I've seen on CNBC, when someone, one of the bumps on the desk said, well, it's all supply chain issue, and he said, there's nothing to do with supply chain. He goes, the supply chain causes a price increase in a particular area if there's a shortage of that particular good. It doesn't cause a general inflation like we have now. The only way you get that is with too much money in the system.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
right. And you know, there's not only is it too much money, there continues to be too much money.
Well, they couldn't wait to get the hook on him.
Yeah.
They dragged him off. If there was a gong show, you'd have heard the gong. No, that's not our party line. It's all supply chain. I mean, when you get Walmart.
You know, they used him a lot, Jimmy Bullard, when he was not on the committee. They used him to go out there to test the market. They put him on CNBC. They put him on the other stations to float the idea of the day, right? So whatever the idea of the day is, are we tightening rates or not tightening rates? Is there inflation? There's no inflation. And they put him out there to test the market. Now that he's going to be on the committee, he'll be an active member of the FOMC starting in the new year. I wonder who they'll use in his place, because they could use him when the committee had to go dark, right? In the days that 5 days before the FOMC meeting, none of the FOMC members could talk, but the ones who were not on the committee could always talk. And Jimmy Bullard was always out there in front.
Well, they're looking for a new guy. They're looking for a guy who used to be on the New York Stock Exchange floor all the time and is always on TV and radio and lives in Florida.
Geez, I wonder who that is.
Who could that be? So, Kenny, when you heard all the Walmart numbers today and how much their sales were up and how much it was gasoline and everything, I'm shaking my head. I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, I can't tell by the gross numbers.
Yeah, no, I don't either. Home Depot came out, too, and they sales up 9.8%. And, you know, you have to listen to what's happening to their margins and do they have pricing power. I think they absolutely have pricing power. You saw what happened to the stock right after the announcement came out. It kind of shot up 4 or 5 points in the pre-market. I think it's come back into where it was. But now that sets it up for Lowe's tomorrow, right? They're all these people running out there, fixing up their homes, spending all kinds of money. Not a big deal. The consumer is strong.
Well, are you shocked that people in a cartel are able to raise prices?
No, I'm not shocked.
Anyway, Kenny, take care of yourself. What are you, are you Bostoning or are you Floridaing for Thanksgiving?
No, we're in Florida for Thanksgiving.
Are you going up for Christmas?
Yep.
It's
what are you doing?
We're hanging. I mean, we're doing a show on Friday, so we're hanging. I don't know if Maddie's going to Iowa or what he's doing. I haven't talked to him, but we'll have a show on Friday morning. And, anyway, we'll see. We'll talk to you before then, buddy. Have a good one. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 2. Come back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome up to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Mel Weber on the board. S&P futures up 250. NASDAQ futures up 375. So we've been up. We're up when we came in, and we kind of leaked down to unchanged, maybe dipped for a second. But now we're back up a little bit. The Dow's up 52 because we still have we've got Home Depot is up 291 based on earnings. It was up like 5-ish, so it's come back some, but still it's up. Walmart's up 59 cents after being up 350. So I have a earnings spread on in Walmart that I didn't get all of. Now I sure wish I did. But we got a partial. Don't you hate partials, Jeff, especially with the winners?
You got a partial. So they have profit forecasts and soaring demand is the story, right?
Yeah, well, they get it's hard to break out. First of all, when people use the term, not you, when people use the term demand, they should be saying quantity demanded, but they never do. I mean, when you say the gasoline, their gasoline sales are what? Their gross value is up 9.5%. That's a lot. What price of gasoline? Right. So the price of gasoline from last year is, what's it up, Matty? 33%, something like that. So if your gross prices are up 9.5 and the prices are up 33, what does that tell you, Jeff?
Well, it explains where we are.
Well, it sounds like they sold less gas.
Yeah,
I mean it's very difficult to break through all this stuff and to see what they're actually doing.
That's true. That's right.
And it makes it. So what's did you guys get your new issue out or what's up with you? What's the new topic? You guys have more good topics than I do. So what's your good topics?
Well, you know, we spent a lot of time on inflation. We just put that to bed a couple of days ago. So we do have that. In motion, right? We're waiting to get that from the point of view now. And then now we're looking at something that's kind of an annual issue. We're focused more on the art and science of prediction. It's an annual thing. We've done it before where we kind of break down the elements that go into forecasting. It's less about making forecasts and making predictions. It's more about the mechanics of it. So looking at the works of things like Phil Tedlock from Super Forecasters or Daniel Kahneman and the psychology of wagering. And it's a topic we revisit all the time. It's kind of a work on explaining the work of probability and wagering, et cetera.
Are we talking about elections, economics, appointments, all of the above?
Well, so I'll go deep down the hole with you. It's kind of interesting. There's an aspect of forecasting. There's a concept called adversarial collaboration. And it's kind of like the dream team approach to policy or forecasting or making decisions about risk. And that is, it's a manner in which people come to the table with distinct biases, very distinct biases, yet they are forced to collaborate on an outcome that would, and policy that would affect certain outcomes. So, you know, you might think of four different politicians and think about it in the economics, for example. You might have a monetarist, a fiscal policy person, you could have a libertarian, you could have an MMT person, that, you know, just all coming to the table with kind of distinctly different biases, but they're forced to collaborate on a series of what-if questions to say, based on their own perspective, what the likely outcome would be of certain events. It could be raising interest rates, it could be having more helicopter money, it could be, you know, tapering, it could be a number of different things. So, yeah, we're going to illustrate this process because it's ideally what politicians should do and policymakers should do. Of course, they don't, for reasons that are strictly political. But we're going to illustrate the process with the help of Warren Hatch, who's the CEO of the Good Judgment Project, and Good Judgment Open, and Phil Tetlock, who is the Super Forecaster, which is going to kind of monitor this case study process that we're doing. So that's what we're putting together. So it'll be very educational. We're all looking forward to it because we're all going to learn.
Jeff, you're kind of breaking up a little bit. You might have to move to a different spot in the room wherever you are.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So that's what we're focused on. We're focused on this process of adversarial collaboration and the manner in which it achieves certain objectives by having people who disagree, yeah, being forced to work on policy outcomes.
Jeff, how do you, when you look at the outcomes of policy and so forth, how do people, well, first of all, I'm going to lead the witness here by saying I don't think they do it very well, but how do you isolate the outcome to see if you did anything that actually influenced it the right way, or maybe your policy actually screwed things up, but they were going good anyway, and you couldn't screw it up bad enough, so you still ended up with a positive outcome. I mean, how do you even? I remember when I was in grad school, it was a big. There's always an issue with. Matter of fact, up until 15, 20 years ago, people were still trading on this stuff. There were people who were absolutely convinced that a stock split was terrific for stock. And so they decided to study the last however many stock splits and as to whether the stock went up or down, because people have this feeling that whenever you announce a stock split, that stocks tend to go up. Okay, so, matter of fact, there were people that had these newsletter things and they would actually, you could, I don't know if you remember this, you could, hire these guys, well, you paid them a fee, and they would send you, well, back in the time, it was a fax or a phone call or whatever, where they would scour all the airwaves or the tape, and they'd, if Jeff Joseph Inc. all of a sudden, only had, you know, 100 million shares, whatever, authorized, if all of a sudden they went to 200 million, it was like, they immediately, the ears would perk up and say, Jeff Joseph Inc. is going to, have a, you know, they're leading up to a stock split. Well, they did, at University of Chicago, they, of course, like they used to do, they stuck their nose in this for like 2 years, and they came back with an absolute, after all that time, instead of dummying something up, Jeff, they used to be actually fairly honest in those days, they came back and said, we can't figure it out. And the reason why they couldn't figure it out is every single time, virtually every single time, that somebody announced a stock split, they also announced better than average earnings or a something else. They would increase their forecast going forward. There was always another piece of good news, at least one, attached to the stock split announcement. So the conclusion was, we have no idea, because we could never isolate. Nobody ever did a stock split with doing nothing else. They just walked out one day and said, we're splitting the stock, and turned around and walked off. And nobody ever did that. And I wonder, when we talk about some of the policies and some of the stuff you're forecasting, you know, and you said if you had a Keynesian in the room or a monetarist, I don't think, in all the stuff I've read, now of course there might have been some, and if a listener knows of some, somebody knows more of economic history than me, which is very possible. Has there ever been a strictly Keynesian move where they said we're gonna increase federal spending, and the guy who was in charge, whoever the guy was, of the money supply said, you're not getting a dime out of me. And somebody went out and they actually hit a, borrow $100 million so they could spend $100 million. I don't think that's ever happened, Jeff. So I don't know if there is such a thing as Keynesian policy.
No, that's true. that's a good point. It's probably why there's such a simpatico relationship between the, you know, president and the Fed chief. I mean, you rarely run into these confrontational scenarios where the policy initiatives of the administration isn't embraced by the Fed. So I can't think of a scenario like that. It's interesting as to who might be the tail wagging the dog there. What's your take on that?
Well, I honestly believe, and I mean, it's tongue in cheek, that in 2018 or whatever it was when Powell started, he actually did start to cut back on the increase in the money supply, and we went into that market tailspin, and he went to the White House for dinner. And he came out, and all of a sudden, the entire policy changed. Whatever they wanted, he gave him. I can't figure out whether he got paddled or waterboarded in there, but something happened. Whether they threatened his family, you know.
That's logical, right?
Yeah, I'm only half kidding.
Administration not to want to see those tapering efforts to begin on the watch, only because they provide so much buoyancy and lift to the stock market, and Trump is absolutely grading his administration. Based on stock market performance for a long time. He was grading economic policy that way. He pointed to the stock market over and over. So his strong-handing or jawboning of the Fed, I would not disagree. I'm sure that had some sort of impact there.
Well, we just had Kenny talking about bringing this lady on to replace Brainerd, is it to replace Powell, how she's more liberal. For God's sake, Jeff, the guy's financing 40% of the deficit. What more do they want out of him?
that's a great point. But you know, it's funny that you brought that up. We make that, well, you're hearing it first because the next issue of the Box has come out for another week. When it comes back from the printer, and we'll be released in digital format for free as well. That's at getlessbox.com. But we do make a prediction about Powell's fate in that issue, and I don't mind revealing it. Even though it's an odds-off prediction, because Powell currently in the prediction markets is trading at about 75%, so reflecting a 75% probability that he'll be reappointed to his next term, which begins in February, or which would end and then begin in February. But we're making the prediction that that Powell will not be reappointed, which is a long odds prediction, and it's only a 25% probability according to the prediction markets, but that means you've got a 4-to-1 payoff if we're fit for than that. So that's quite frankly, that's my call. I believe that this administration will succumb to, not in the favor of a bipartisan kind of approach, and that's what Powell basically represents, because even though he was initially appointed to the Board of Governors by Obama, he became chairman under Trump, but he's initially an Obama appointee. But there's just so much pressure, particularly from the likes of Warren and some others, to look for a new Fed chair. I think Biden is going to take advantage of his low approval ratings and basically show that he's doing something to combat the one topic that will be spoken about more this holiday season than anything, and that's inflation.
Well, plus he is.
So I think it's going to be a political, opportunistic play to throw Powell under the bus, and maybe some of that might be deserved, maybe not. But I that's my call, is that I think Powell's gone. What do you think?
Well, I know whoever it is, the replacement has to be female or black.
Well, that's likely, and I guess that's what Brainerd.
Yeah, there's no way that, like, Bullard from
Brainerd or Boskin, you know, are candidates.
No, there's no chance in this administration that if you're not, the gnat is always going to go to the female. Without it. I mean, I'm saying she's not brilliant. She probably is, but I mean, they couldn't wait to get Janet Yellen back. She had no business anywhere near that administration after taking the $7 million from the big firms like she did, in my opinion. But then again, I'm a little harsher about that stuff than some people.
Well, there you go. You've got a 400% payout, a 41 play. If you go to predictit.org, which are those legal prediction markets, it's one of the questions. If Powell will be reappointed, right now he's probably trading for about 72 cents. So if you bought a no, that would be around 29 cents and close to a 4-to-1 payoff, if you're right.
When are we going to get somebody that has the stones to say, you know what? Everybody's worried about me being reappointed. Screw you guys. I'm out of here. Anybody thinks his job is independent out of their, is out of their mind. I've been doing everything I haven't wanted to do for the last 2 years, and I'm out. When's somebody going to have the balls to say that?
Yeah, you think it'd be a pretty cushy job, right? Plus, you know...
They only make... There's
I bet you the Fed works from home, too, right? He, Powell's probably sitting somewhere in his sweats, you know?
I'm thinking...
Has a salary in a couple of days, and just spreading, directing helicopters without money.
I hope people don't only shower when they're going by somebody else. Just saying. Anyway, well, you know,
so that's interesting, though. That's your call as well. You think that Biden will bail on Powell?
I don't think he wants a job. I think last couple times I saw him on TV, the body language to me is he's not doing policy that he thinks is right. He's being forced into it. And I, from what my friends at the Fed tell me, he's no, all kinds of people at the Fed make more money than he does.
That's an interesting take. All right, I'm feeling better about.
I mean, nobody. When you're in a job like that, I think your ego always is that no matter how much pressure I'm getting on this job, I can do. Especially if you're a decent guy or lady, you're going to say, "I can roll with the punches. I can still do a better job than the next person because, you know, even with the constraints I'm under, I can still do a better job than the next person." But at some point, you sit there and go, "Under these constraints, I can't do anything." You know, I mean, you're going to chain me to the bench. I can't be much help on the football field, right? I mean, but it's hard for people to do that. They, you know, but I mean, do you think he thinks he's accomplished what he wants to do? Does he like pumping out this money every month and telling people you can't look at M2 and giving out reports late? I can't imagine that's his idea. Do you think?
Well, he's accomplished a lot. You know, I mean, GDP's or debt's up to 40% of GDP now, and. You know, that's a lot. He's got a lot to show for it.
Well, he's got a lot that he did, but I mean, I don't think that that's his. Do you think that if we were to read some of the stuff he wrote 2-3 years ago or 5 years ago or 10, do you think that this is what he wants to do? I don't think so.
No.
I mean, you really wonder who the. I mean, it seems to me that they're always beholden to the big banks. And every single time something happens like this, the big banks get bigger somehow. And they've got this lady from the Comptroller of Currency. I don't know what her story is, but the weird part is Jeff. Well, we had the tax issue a couple of weeks ago. Are we going to tax the rich based on their wealth? Well, professional traders have been taxed that way since 1984. It's not like it's a. I'm not saying I'm for it. I'm just saying a lot of times people get taxed on wealth increases, not just whether you sell it or not. It's not like it's unheard of, right? If you become a professional trader and you bought, 9 bazillion shares of Tesla at the beginning of the year and you're up 40, of course, things have been nothing going down lately, but say you're up 50%, you're up $30 million in Tesla, your income's $30 million. You don't have to sell it, right?
That's right.
Well, now, and, so it's not like this stuff is sort of unprecedented. I mean, it's strange that the government is the one who did it. I mean, the reason why this lady says, well, you might just be able to go right to the Federal Reserve. There's already people doing that. The exchanges, the clearing corps, they have their open window at the Fed. They don't go through banks anymore. And why is that? Because the banks are hamstrung. If you don't money them, they're the one, they made the banks so they couldn't take money and they can't give loans. And they wonder why people want to go around and write to the Fed. I mean, they're creating their own problems. They're thinking of solving, Jeff. It's crazy.
They could benefit from some adversarial collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, where do you see a good example of that where people are?
Well, we are going to focus on monetary and fiscal policy. Even though it's, you know, we just covered that issue extensively in this current issue that we're waiting for that comes out next week. But this is more about the process and offering a case study. So, and since inflation is going to stay top of mind of everyone throughout the holiday season, we figure it's the best opportunity to illustrate. So help me. This is how we had a long conference call yesterday with Phil Delong, who's the author of Super Forecaster, which is pretty much the definitive book on forecasting and prediction and adjusting risk based on, you know, outcome and coming to conclusions, right? He's all about the science of prediction. And he said that in the perfect world, to illustrate this, we need four politicians, maybe two on the left, two on the right, but each with very, very distinct approaches, as you said, Keynesian, a monetarist, you know, et cetera. So we were thinking thus far, we've got maybe Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, AOC, and Elizabeth Warren. You know, at least Rand Paul is different from a Cruz or maybe a Kevin McCarthy. AOC is not that different from Warren, but she is a little bit. But who do you think would be two politicians on the left, elected officials that have pretty divergent views, one more radical and one more mainstream, when it comes to fiscal policy and monetary policy?
I don't know. You can't have, if I'm going, you can't have Elizabeth Warren there. I don't want her pointing her finger at me like my aunt I never liked. Just saying. Now, AOC, she'd be okay.
I mean, really, she can point her finger at me.
Yeah, she can point her finger at me.
That's an easy one.
God. Whatever. I mean, if we're doing cocktails afterward, I'd rather have AOC there than Elizabeth Warren. Let's put it that way. Just saying. But, I mean, now that you're going down this road, let me ask you an interesting question. What if you and I were there and we fought again? Now, I have this divergence of views, one being my education, one where I grew up, right? At some point, I'm going to stop fighting for, if I'm a congressperson, I'm going to stop fighting for this bill that I think is ridiculously too big and we can't afford. At some point, I'm going to fall back and say, well, if everybody else is getting this, I better get some for my district. Right? I mean, the last thing we want is if Jeff Joseph is my guy or Matt Weber is our guy, to fight the good fight and come home with nothing. We need roads too. We better get our share or more, or I'm going to wonder what I sent them out there for. It's definitely a two-edged sword, right?
Yeah, certainly. That's
horse
trading. Yeah, absolutely.
When I'm going to tell you the story. When I went out to Arizona to buy this pickup truck first, I didn't really need it, but my parents had both died and we were cleaning out the house, so I figured, okay, we can use a pickup truck. Plus, I never driven back from that way on the old 66, so I wanted to do that. It was like a bucket list thing. So, I'm pulling out of New Mexico and into Texas on I-40. It's windy as hell and about 100 degrees. I'm thinking, what am I doing out here? But the road in New Mexico had to be, let's put it this way, the base, what do you call it? The original road had to be however many years. You could see it had three or four asphalt, you know, every 10 years, redo the top kind of thing. And it was in marginal shape. The minute we crossed into Texas, when George Bush was in office, the road is brand new. I'm sitting there going, and Obama had just gotten elected. I'm thinking, well, you know, I don't know how good of a president he's going to be, but it means all the roads in Illinois look like this. It might at least be a good thing for Illinois. That never happened for us, I don't think, but it did for Texas. The thing was brand new. So, I mean, at least out of this $1.7 trillion that's supposedly going to be Ford, that somebody says, I hope we at least get 1/50th plus, right?
Right.
Just saying.
Right. Well, you know, I'll be... I mean, it is an accomplishment, obviously, you know, to be able to point to something that's probably the first material accomplishment of the administration, is to be able to point to a bipartisan legislation, something that essentially everybody is pretty much in favor of, for, you know, they'll quibble over the size of the infrastructure bill, but, you know, there's a general consensus that we're way behind as a country in terms of infrastructure. All you need to do is travel is 2 weeks to get a sense of that. So it is a notch in his kind of administration. It's something to point to. I'm just curious to see if that will offset inflation levels, because with the president sitting at 38% approval rating and the vice president at 28%, those are really, really rough numbers. Remember that? That really, really reflects a general consensus that we're on the wrong track. And those wrong track numbers, some of you were looking at those yesterday, because we always look carefully at what Pew and Gallup and other polls are saying, because it helps us, you know, with editorials about it, you know, see where the pulse is. And,
Jeff, I think it's probably not going to. Here's why. This is what's getting me very, very sour. Is well, several things, but you notice when I love old engineering projects. I read about them all the time. You know, you look at, you know, Hoover Dam was done what, 2 years early, and under budget.
Yes. Yep.
And it took less time to build Hoover Dam than by a factor of like two or three than the Burn Interchange. And this thing is what? How many? The Bay Bridge reconstruction from the Chinese company was what, four times over budget? Three times? And it took 2 years longer than it was supposed to? I mean, the idea of having these inept people splitting up $1.7 trillion, I think there's projects on the books there, Jeff, that we don't even need anymore. These things are old projects. One of them in there is the 20-year plan they've been thinking about for total redo of the Eisenhower Expressway. Is that really needed now? I mean, are we coming to work downtown? I mean, the Inglewood flyover here in Chicago, it was needed for 30 years when people were coming to the South Loop and the Rock Island was the trains are jammed. Now they got it. In the meantime, there was so much ingested in Chicago, the trains bypass Chicago. They go through Joliet. The time they built it, they don't even need it. I mean, how many projects like that are buried in here? They're just nothing for somebody doing it. You wonder why the hell do we even do that? I mean, do you think there's a complete review of everything we're actually going to spend money on tomorrow? And how much are we going to lose along the way? I mean, how much money actually went for the project here for the Burn Interchange versus somebody's pocket? I mean, I think we're so rife with corruption and incompetence. I don't know we can do much of anything anymore. I honestly don't.
Sure. Well, you have to pass the bill to see what's in it.
Okay, Nancy. That had me one of the greatest lines ever. Well, SP Futures up 2, Nancy Futures up 4. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali's Mr. Brent Weber on the board. S&P futures down 25 cents. NASDAQ futures down 10, which is a little surprising. We've got a pretty strong retail sales number here, up 1.4%, I guess, ex-auto. Import prices up 1.2%, but I don't see anything horrible in this number at all. I mean, I don't think it's certainly not bad. And it kind of runs right in along the same lines as Walmart and Home Depot saying their sales are up. And Lowe's is up there this morning, too, although their earnings aren't until tomorrow, I believe. Dow's up 63. The stocks that were, Home Depot's back up $4. It was, up more, and then it came down, and it's back up some. Walmart's up only 13 cents, though. It's, again, I should have got more in my partial, Maddie. That sucks. Over in Asia, we've got, Nikkei up 31.1%, Shanghai down 11.3%. Hang Seng, however, with a pretty good bump up 322, that's 1.3%. If somebody's called Razor shares, maybe Jeff knows what Razor shares are. In Hong Kong are up today. They have individual stocks there. Evidently, the second real estate firm after Evergrande that was going to have all kinds of problems, that seems to have been washed by too. So whatever payment they were supposed to make, I guess they must have made because it's not in the news anyway. U.S. yesterday, we've got, yesterday we're down 12 in the Dow, S&P down a nickel, NASDAQ down 7. So again, not much of a day yesterday. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 68.4%, FTSE down 4, call that flat. CAC around up 27.4%, so mildly positive there, except for the FTSE. We've got bonds unchanged at 1.62. The 20-year, the 30-year went past 2% yesterday. It's down under that today. It's 19.92. It closed at 2.07. We'll see if it actually does back up or not. Japan unchanged at 0.07. Oil up 67 cents, 81.55. Remember yesterday morning it ducked under 80 for just a brief moment and back up over. Brent up 75 cents, 82.80. Natural gas up 14 cents, 5.16. I just wish I'd have sold that thing over 6, bought it under 5 like 3 times in the last few weeks. We'd be rich, Manny. RBOB up 3 cents, 2.36. We've got gold up $8, 18.74. We're worried about I was ever going to make it to 18. Now we're wondering if it's going to make it to 19. Silver up 26 cents, 25.36, which is starting to look like maybe it was a breakout at 25. Well, we'll see if it keeps going or not. Copper down 2 cents to 4.37. And last but not least, we had a big move down in Bitcoin yesterday. $3,500 down in the Bitcoin to 60,395, but still back to where it was like a week ago. Maddie, a lot of stuff there. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a couple of crashes to report this morning here on a Tuesday. Outbound Edens just before Foster, there's a crash blocking the left lane. This is causing a bit of congestion as you split from the Kennedy onto the Edens. You're heading northbound as you approach Foster. You'll start to see some delays there as that left lane is blocked with crews on the scene. No issues on the inbound Edens, but we do have some delays on the Kennedy, about 45 minutes from O'Hare into downtown. Eisenhower traffic starting to build as well, but no accidents to report. We do have a crash on the Stevenson, however. This is a crash on the left shoulder of the outbound side right at Harlem, which is exit 283, and that's causing delays on the outbound I-55 Stevenson, so keep that in mind. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford look normal right now. No accidents to report. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Out in the northwestern suburbs, we have a crash Gulf Road at Route 59. But that's it for crashes out there. Weather today, we warm up a little bit from yesterday, but still below normal. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 49. Right now it's overcast and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 83 today. Right now it's clear and 58. In sports, the Bulls swept the L.A. teams in back-to-back nights down at the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles, beating up on the Lakers last night, 121-103. Bulls playing good ball. Suns are playing good ball as well. They beat the Timberwolves 99-96. NFL football, it was the 49ers blowing out the Rams on Monday Night Football last night, 31-10. And in college hoops, number 10, Illinois blew a 12-point second-half lead and were upset by Marquette up in Milwaukee, 67-66. Chief.
The these retail sales number to me look fairly strong. Now we've got the NASDAQ is up 20 and the S&P's up 5. I kind of suspected they'd be heading up with those numbers. Hey, Jeff, I got a question for you. I don't know if you listened to the show yesterday. What did you think of that, the story we had? I don't know if you spotted it, where Apple is in bed with four states now to bring have your driver's license online on their app or something, and they've cut these deals with the states where they control how the state advertises it and who else they can share it with. What do you make? I know you just did the privacy issue a month or two ago. Was that even in the works when you guys were doing that privacy issue?
No, that was not on our radar, but they are doing something similar in other countries. Apple's worked out online identification systems that have complete kind of your government ID, government-issued ID, that Apple's enabled. They've done tests on this in various different countries where your complete profile persona is captured digitally, it's on your phone, and you no longer need a driver's license or an identification card, your medical history, all that's kind of wrapped up on the phone and all held digitally in cloud-based digital certificates. So, you know, there's a number of privacy concerns about that because it's hackable, you know. So I imagine that won't be working its way here right away, but it's controversial. Bill Gates actually has backed this effort, and he started to second guess it. He put millions into a program that tested this in a particular country, I forget which one, and the results of it were that it was contributing to inequality and a caste system based that would be kind of mark to market, a real time caste system based on your digital footprint, your digital data. So these are the kind of things that Apple's working on, but I don't think you'll see it here shortly. It's being tested.
Four states have already signed up for it. They're like blue states too, Arizona and the other three.
Yeah, that seems to be just with respect to driver's license,
right?
The complication is I believe this was tested in India with Apple, and it got into medical records, which would violate the equivalent of our HIPAA regulations here. But yeah, that is in the same way the objective is a cashless society, by Silicon Valley and big tech, a purely digital society that doesn't rely on any paper records. It's also the other thing.
Are the rest of us going to wake up before it's too late, you think, or no?
Well, to the current administration's credit, we've got new people in the FTC that are very, very aware of the danger of monopolies. And let's see. Hopefully something happens there. Lena Khan is the person that everyone has a lot of hope for. If she cut through all the red tape and kind of changed decades of inaction in terms of anti-competitive practices, maybe we'll see something happen there.
Do you think that they, when it really comes down to it, that anybody has a stone to do anything? I'm going to say no.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, the more somebody gets ingratiated to you, you can't give up your Secretary of State's office to Apple and then the next day hit him with an antitrust suit.
Well, they're big lobbyists. That's their power. We've talked about this before, but big tech, particularly Apple, Google, and Facebook, spend more on lobbyists now than the combined total of lobbyists spend on military and defense and healthcare spending. So think about that for a moment. Those three companies, Facebook, Google, and Amazon, are spending more on and lobbyists and the entire pharmaceutical industry and the defense industry. That's a lot of money. So that's a lot of influence, and yeah, it's going to tilt a lot of votes.
I'm going to say that those guys probably spend a lot more in statewide than the other ones would. I mean, you wouldn't, if you're a Lockheed, you really don't need to lobby Illinois senators and reps. But yeah, those guys, does that include federal and state?
No, that's a federal number. That's federal lobbying.
I'm going to say it's probably actually.
You're right. I can't think that defense spending or pharmaceutical spending has the same impact at the state level as the technology spending would be.
Yeah, strange stuff. I'm anxious to see where you guys are going with this new issue. I just you kind of wonder if the setup even now, if the when people always used to ask, I guess, was Congress set up to deal with John Rockefeller and Carnegie and those guys? The answer probably was no, at least for a while. But it all eventually they ended up blowing up. Was it because Congress did anything, or whether those people just died, or what? I mean, it seems like the corporation today is a little more. I mean, obviously Standard Oil's still here, but not in the same sort of size. I mean, what? It's not like it's a brand new problem, Jeff. But it's. Do you think we are less or more able to defend ourselves against it than before?
Well, it is a new problem because technology has changed so dramatically that the implications of unbridled technology companies and you know, big tech ambition, particularly as it relates to privacy and anti-competitive practices, and because they're sitting on the cash. Remember, one of the conclusions that I think you'll find interesting in our next issue coming out of inflation is that this, you know, if you're looking for a path forward for investors, unfortunately, as much as we hated to come to that conclusion, just continue to buy those companies that benefit from, you know, our current debt structure and our current, you know, the current structure, because that's basically big tech. They have the cash. They're acquiring companies. They're, you know, they continue to acquire other companies. And the deflationary cycle of more technology, computing power, more technology for less, it just benefits those companies. There's no reason to believe that, you know, Google and Apple are going to be, you know, any less powerful going forward because of they benefit from the deflationary cycle as well. If they continue to replace businesses, right? I mean, the point of deflation that's argued is the obvious one, right? Because you have a cell phone, you don't have a fax machine, you don't have an alarm clock, you don't have a record player, you don't have a travel agent, you don't have a calendar, you don't have a lot of these things that you're used to buying. And sure, phones are expensive, but they've eliminated the need for all those other things. So they're purely deflationary. They're providing more for less. And these companies that are in the business of developing inflationary products, they have all the advantages, and they're just going to continue to grow. There's nothing in their wake or nothing in front of them than the threat of the FTC, you know, just doing something on anti-competitive practices, but there's no other obstacle. That's one of the conclusions we came to.
Well, I think it's an interesting one. I wonder how you would contrast.
They benefit from the debt structure. They have a lot of cash, and they're just going to continue to grow.
Well, I think that if I were to, you know, castigate Powell more than I normally do, the whole idea of running your interest rates down to zero and not bringing everybody else with you, you know, while you still have banks that you're giving money for free, charging 24% on credit cards, that would never go on if I was there. I couldn't do that. That's just me. But these guys don't seem to have any problem with it. I mean, and like you say, the supply chain issue to me, I mean, if I had the time and, you know, and I had, you know, some kind of a staff at a university or something, you know, like somebody like Hal could have some people do some stuff for people. I mean, the idea that I honestly believe that if you look at people that can't leave their jobs because of student loan debt, if you were to list like 10 little things it seem little. If you list those 10 things and you could take them all together, that's why you have not necessarily supply chain problems, why you have the inability of people to fill the void, which is really the strength of our economy. You didn't have to tell, we had a client, I don't know, he was not doing so well, I hope he's still with us, but he had a group that whenever people put together a big project, be it, you know, a construction project or, you know, whatever you were doing, remodeling McCormick Place, whatever it is, he would look at all the electrical drawings, and he'd realize that one of the things that the engineers aren't so hot at is all the little stuff. You know, they knew where all the pipes were going, they knew the wires, they knew how the place was going to be wired. I mean, they're geniuses at that. But all the little stuff that they didn't, they weren't so good at. So he would show up with essentially a fully equipped, serious-sized truck, not a semi, and he'd say, I went over the drawings, which I guess you could do in public record, and he'd say, this thing says you need 50 of this kind of fasteners, let me help you, you need 5,000, you know, that kind of thing. And I just happen to have all of them here in a truck, everything you need. And guys would say, okay.
Of course.
But I mean, now, he couldn't have had massive student loan debt, or he could never have gotten a loan for the truck. He had to get the loan for the truck. He had to go out and borrow money for the inventory. There's things he needed to fill that void. And I think it's very, very difficult now for an individual person or persons to gather that all together in time to show up to sell it. You know, this is just one small example of things that really somebody actually did that. Yeah. I mean, but that's the American way, is filling a void, right? As you look out and you say, wow, it looks to me like Jeff's putting his restaurant together and he can't seem to find any nails. Guess what? I can put a nail factory together pretty quick and I'll be over there saying, hey, Jeff, looks to me like if you had these better nails, your work could go twice as fast. And Jeff's going to go, that's a good idea. I'll buy some. I mean, that's our system, right? And somehow or another, it is not working. Now, these guys, and the other thing with those guys is idea convenience. I mean, you're not going to get anybody cutting back on Apple until they personally or know somebody who their identity has been grabbed by somebody. I know somebody who has a cell phone, and he just got hacked. And I'm like, well, Kevin, I told him what happened. Kevin knows something about this. So does Maddie. He got into his bank account when every one of these places that, you know, you can do, I can like give cash to you by just giving you the thing over there or tapping your phone or whatever the hell it is, all those places.
Yes.
Every single one of them was into his bank for $3,000 or $4,000. So I'm thinking his phone must have got hacked and everybody piled into it. The bank ended up helping him out and they got half of it back and the bank made him good on some of the other. He ended up whole, I think. But it was, I'm going to say, 7 different places. Somehow got into his bank account, and it must have been, like Kevin said, it had to be through his phone. Where else? And people tell me they use Wi-Fi all the time. Dr. J tells me he was on a first-class plane seat where, you know, John likes to sit. The guy, he taps into his computer, and the guy next to him says, would you like me to tell you your password? Jack goes, what are you talking about? He goes, I can tell you anybody's password on a Wi-Fi. I mean, why are we so ignorant about what's going down the road here, Jeff? I mean, I'm not saying we should, you know, go back to, you know, driving a buggy, but, I mean, clearly people are ignoring all the problems to a big extent, I think.
Well, that's the current issue of Luckboxes. It was all about data privacy and the things you can do to protect it. That's the current issue. That's free for anyone who wants to pick it up. Just go to the website and grab it. But there seems to be that ongoing trade that people make for convenience and this kind of willingness to ignore these issues until they're too late. You know, The story that you just shared about a friend being hacked, we hear those all the time, right? And then what do we really do about it?
Nothing. Even a simple stuff.
Everything? I mean, and they made it so it's not easy. So I have made those changes. We talked about this before when we were together. You know, I've eliminated Google from my browser and rely on DuckDuckGo completely. And I have a VPN now. None of that's easy, and you really do lose some of the user experience. There's no question about it.
I'm on
my phone using DuckDuckGo, and I want to find out, you know, where's the nearest ATM, where's an open Walgreens that's closest to me. It's just not as friendly and seamless user experience.
No, for a reason.
Because Google is so good at what they do. But, you know, if you're willing to trade some of those conveniences for the comfort of privacy, then you're going to be less of a victim, but people aren't.
Well, even, I mean, Kevin, you know, every once in a while, you know, we'll toss back an adult beverage when I get to see him, which is too rare. You know, he'll tell me, you know, I sit here and I, basically, Jeff, I rag about this all the time. And yet I'm the biggest idiot as anybody else. He goes, now, I got this thing once. I got this thing, talking about Southside. Somebody sent me this stuff about my background. And there wasn't much in there because I don't have much of a background, but they had every single car I owned. They must have got it from the Secretary of State. Back to, you know, the first car I titled was a 65 Oldsmobile. How the hell would anybody
know that? Hold on. What was your first car?
It was I'm saying this was a 65 Oldsmobile. But I'm saying, so Kevin says, I hope you're not dumb enough, now that you know that, to when they give you that question, what was your first car, to put down Oldsmobile. And I go, well, that was my first car. He goes, you're dumber than I think. Put down a Duesenberg. why would you put down your actual car, you idiot? He goes, I bet you're even dumber. You put down your mother's maiden name. I go, yeah. Put down Donald Trump. Your mother's name, Donald. What's the matter with you?
What was the old model? What was it?
Well, the first one was a Dynamic 88, 425, two-barrel, 310 horse.
How about it? How about Maddie? How about you? First car.
1991 Pontiac Sunbird.
Wow. That's
Yeah, that's a good one. Mine was a 74 Trans Am. Yeah.
I used to pull in a gas station and get about 5 gallons of gas and 2 quarts of oil. The thing leaked like a sieve.
And it cost you like 50 cents?
Oh, what's the cheapest you ever got gas, Jeff?
Below a buck is all I remember, but I don't know where.
Well, I had a 19.9. It was always 9. Even still, it's 9, but back then, the 9 meant something. I mean, 19.9 really meant 20 cents.
20 cents, right? You got gas? Wow.
Yeah. But most of the time, it was 20. Well, when the era of oil.
Yeah, now, we're not talking about White Castles. Now we're talking about
gas. Well, when it first made it to a dollar with the Arab oil embargo, people were horrified.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it was most of the time, it was 35 cents, 40 cents. And if there was a gas war, you go to a corner where they had all these gas stations, and one guy had a big sign up, gas war, like 22 cents, the other guy would be 19 cents. But
would you agree that we're pretty vulnerable for a scenario right now? For example, you remember Ed Yardini, of course.
Yeah.
We interviewed him in the upcoming issue, and we asked him as to where, you know, what the tipping point for the current inflationary trend would be. And in his experience of, you know, following the markets for 6 decades, and he essentially said it's all comes down to energy prices, right? If they continue to move higher or sustain higher levels, then, you know, we're in big trouble. So let me ask you, because that's always front and center, where do you think oil's headed?
Are we gonna
see 100, or is it
I don't think so, Jeff. I mean, you know, the reason why I say that, there's like 21 countries that export oil. I mean, not very much, some of them, but yeah. What do you think happened? I mean, I shouldn't be answering a question with a question, but I was looking up here some old story I had about when the Cushing, when the oil was trading for negative dollar and the IB system that was what? Was that 16 months ago? 18 months ago?
Yeah.
You couldn't have put a teaspoon more oil in Cushing. Every ship was loaded with oils. People were renting them to put oil. Now here we are, 18 months later, and all that's changed. What the hell could possibly have changed in 18 months? We're not using that much more.
I guess the argument would be that OPEC saw an opportunity to take advantage of the energy initiatives that the Biden administration's been pursuing. You had the prior 4 years were all based on energy independence as an objective and pumping oil. And that's, I mean, it's true. I mean, Trump administration did achieve energy independence. And then you have, on day one, you cancel the Keystone Pipeline and you start looking at other things. And I think they got exactly what they hope for. I don't know if that's cynical or if that's conspiracy.
Well, okay, now when you say that.
I think this administration intended to see a rise in oil prices and just to calibrate what its impact would be against a other supply chain issues and other other factors contributing to inflation.
All right, so I'm going to say
that then their objective is to increase the price of the.
Okay, now if that's the case,
I don't know. What do you think? I actually believe that.
I believe it. Well, the quickest way to cause people to use less oil is to get the price up, right?
Right.
I mean, that would be the economic way to do it. I'm not saying you should do it, but the Keystone. I think it might have been a PR thing, but that never was going to affect our oil here. It was Canadian.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. No, it's just a perception. Right. There's no question.
I'd like to find out how much more is actually being used, you know, after the pandemic has abated some.
We are pumping, and we just looked at this. We are 2 million barrels a day short of production from what we were averaging,
really?
During the Trump administration.
That's
a big number.
That's a big number.
And so there is no accident that our gas prices are so much higher. We're pumping 2 million barrels a day less.
Well, next week let's talk about given the glacier speed that everything, even people do in Washington, how could they do that in a year and a half?
When there's a political will, I suppose.
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with the prices got down so low that a lot of people, that the rigs just left. And it's hard to start it back up again. I think there's a lot of it, it's just
natural. Sure, but then some other effects. And then we were coming out of Delta, you know, and people were starting, had pandemic fatigue and they were hitting the roads a little bit more for a while. So, all these things kind of happen, but,
all right, bud, well, we got to dash.
The number one thing, I mean, it's simple. It's production.
Yeah.
As we ease back on production, of course we're going to have it.
All right, bud, take care of yourself. We'll talk about it more next week. S&P futures down 15, NASDAQ futures unchanged. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4255.